to give you an update on where we are in terms of effect analysis. And just briefly to recap, you may recall that the group established the effect analysis consultative group, which published a number of recommendations which board ought to follow in assessing the effects of prospective standards. The first published standard in relation to which an effect analysis carried out post the publication of this report was in relation to IFRS 16 leases. That effect analysis was comprehensive and is publicly available and can be seen on our website. And as I say, the first effect analysis to be published which follows the recommendations of this consultative group. We're also busy now working on the effect analysis for the assurance contract standards that will be similarly comprehensive. I think it is a much more challenging effect analysis to do because of the different patchwork of the council practices that one finds across the world. But that is also a substantial piece of work that is currently being conducted. The paper just also touches on, and I think one reason why I think it would be useful to bring this paper, it touches on how the process used to work before the group made its recommendations. And that's particularly relevant because IFRS 9 has been going through certain the most recent phase of enforcement in Europe, amongst other jurisdictions. And at that point, when IFRS 9 was published, that predates the report, and therefore, to the extent that effective considered, you will find those in the basis of the decision. So we will be bringing the insurance effect analysis, or an update on that effect analysis, to future meetings of this committee. And as I say, the purpose of this is just to bring you up to date on where we are and how we're progressing with these recommendations.
Thank you. I have a question about the insurance effects analysis. I note that you talk about the difficulties of the effects analysis, the quantitative effects analysis of IFRS 9, and you mentioned the difficulty in insurance with the variety of existing accounting practices, but I would have also thought the difficulty would arise from the different products and different business models around the world. So I'm just curious how you've gone about doing that and what information you're using to do the effects analysis.
The good point, Sheila, we've spent a lot of time trying to think creatively about how we gather data to provide a case that's useful and informative on the topic. And we have actually somebody working on it full time. Let the committee know how serious it is in our case. What they have been able to do is to use examples of situations in Canada where an owner can get available information for one entity under both IFRS and US GAAP for a product. So some of these types of instances provide some quantitative information which at least illustrates how different the numbers can be as a consequence of different health practices. So rather than really trying to set up quantifying, you know, what's likely to be the difference in the size of insurance companies across the world's balance sheet, which is almost impossible to quantify.
Yeah. Yeah.
What we've tried to do in the effects analysis is really highlight some instances where we can show true comparisons, just how different the numbers can be for a particular entity and different gaps. And the other thing we've tried to illustrate, which I think is one of the key differences that will be introduced by the new insurance standard IFRS 17, is showing how diverse the different accounting is across the world now. And it's really the bringing up to one common language for insurance that the effects analysis goes into a lot of detail on. And what we've managed to find, for example, is how different the revenue figures and the balance sheet figures could be across the world for different products where we've been able to find possible information. And I think it's quite compelling what we've been able to find. So it's been a big job, but I think that's what we're trying to
do. Just adding to what Sue just said, I've read a draft of this, early draft of the effect analysis, and when you read it, it's quite shocking. It is quite shocking that one and the same company, in one gap makes a loss and in another gap makes a profit, same year. And that's the Canadian Canadian example, and it is also quite shocking, the description of current accounting practices in insurance, which are completely at odds with all the basic principles of revenue recognition, such as recognizing deposits as revenue. And you can imagine that is doing that, or investment companies doing that. So I found it quite a shocker, and for people who are completely foreign to accounting and basically think, well, it's all a matter of just adding and subtracting. It can be quite a lead to a bit of a loss of confidence in accounting, and just go to show how urgent it is that we make it a standard and finalize it as soon as possible.
Thank you.
Thank you for that that emphasis. Dick, please.
Committee just took a very brief position to phase in the effect. effects of IFRS 9 on bank capital. So to give them a transfer arrangement that they did not have to compensate for the increases in capital that we saw with higher provisioning immediately pulled inside. That they have some time to phase that in. And that is a very reasonable way to cope with something of which the impact is not quite clear, how steep it is, how manageable it is. So in practice, it should not lead to enormous
problems. Thank you. Thank you for those comments. And I appreciate also the point you made with respect to the post-implementation review that will also follow. But Alan, please.
Yeah, I think you just may have picked up most of my point. I was curious about the general interaction between the PIR, the post-implementation review process that we have decided to embark on, and the effects analysis. If you're doing the post-implementation review, not just a design or a performance, but more generally, will the results of that review, as discussed, also include a feedback loop on the effects analysis and what we've learned since the date of the effects analysis as a result of the review?
Very much.
I think the answer is yes. I mean, there's some overlap, obviously, between the post-implementation review and effect analysis, so I think the answer to your question is yes.
My only distinction is I viewed the effect analysis as part of the endorsement process and something that is somewhat prospective, and the post-implementation review will be after the fact. We'll have a chance to really look at what were the real facts instead of what we anticipated that they might be. But I do know that this movement to, an expected loss model is capturing significant energy inside financial institutions right now. And I think as that becomes more visible, as they move from an adjective of this has the result of increasing our allowance for credit losses, when it moves from an adjective to a number, then there's going to be, even greater attention to it.
I guess I was focusing on a more general point, which is, I agree with you, the whole point of the effect analysis is a forward predictive exercise. The post-implementation review is a backward-looking what really happened. But I think it would be useful output of the PIR to assess what really happened against what we predicted in terms of learning from our actions.
Fair and helpful. Thank you. Takafumi, please.
Yes. Thank you, Jim. Assuming that IFRS 9 has a great ambition interest on the banking, and since the banking is heavily regulated, so I wonder if this effects analysis should cover the effect on the behavior of regulators, in some cases, the regulating rules are very closely connected to the IFRS 9 rules. So there might be some arrangement to in line with these rules. So I wonder if this effect analysis could develop to a more productive exchange of views.
The first answer to this question is that the banking regulators would have killed us if we had not done IFRS 9. So that's led to Sanders has done a good job with the regulatory community. They have also, the Basel Committee has also, so they completely agreed with the spirit of IFRS 9 with a more forward-looking expected loss model. That's also how they look at some of the potential requirements that they have both on the banking sector Secondly, they have looked at our standard, have developed more detailed guidance. Basel Committee for the banking industry, we have taken a look at that guidance to make sure that it is completely compliant with IFRS 9 and satisfied that it is. So we've been working very closely with the regulators to make sure that they will. Obviously, our standard is not a regulatory standard, it's a standard to show what's there and not to make sure that the reserves are at an adequate level. That's the job of the financial regulator. But they feel very comfortable with the standard and are sure that they can work with it on the basis of our information that IFRS 9 provides. They are confident that they can take care of this.
Thank you for that question, Hans. Thank you for that. Also, just simply an amplification of this relationship as it continues to evolve. I'm happy to resolve our discussion on the effects analysis unless there's any other questions, but we certainly have, in the case of IFRS 9 and in the case of insurance, we're going to have some very real case studies and some very real experience of how effective this is as part.